Okay, one more time. The URL for the notes page is marketingexperimentsblog.com. My name is Brian. My email address is editor@marketingexperiments.com if you have any problems with that page. The URL or the email address if you have any questions is questions@marketingexperiments.com. And we will try to answer those questions in the course of the call this afternoon. And at this time, Nick will go ahead and introduce the blog page.
Okay, the URL that that Brian has given you for today's clinic is a new page we put up called Marketing Experiments Blog. In addition to using it for the purpose of clinic, which is this one, we have a couple of other uses in mind. We're gonna add there comments, small pieces of data we pick up, interpretation of data. But primarily, what drove us to create the page was that during these clinics, we receive numerous emails asking questions and some very interesting questions. During the clinic itself, we have a chance to answer maybe two or three of them sometimes. And what we thought is that while we sometimes spend time writing answers back to the individual, only us and that individual gets to hear the question and answer. And often, like I say, they're very useful, interesting questions. So what we're going to do is when you email in your questions relating to the clinic, some we will attempt to answer during the course of the call itself, but others, and it may not be every question, but where we think a question would be is interesting to a broader audience, we will post both the question and our answer to the blog. So, you know, over the next couple of days, come back to the blog, and you'll probably find some questions and answers that have risen from this clinic. And like I say, beyond that, when we come across data or we come across interesting thoughts or facts, we'll be posting to the blog on an almost daily basis anyway. So as Brian suggested, bookmark it. It's not good just for clinic days. It should be an interesting read for most days.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Brian, I think skipping formal introductions, I might just get started with our topic. I'd like to do a sound check at the beginning of this. We are in the middle of a move over here at MEC. We think everything is smooth, but literally on this very day, moving crews are connecting us between two different offices, and I'm on a wireless notebook while they're hooking up my main computers and conducting the conference. So I don't foresee any technical difficulties, but please be aware of that as we are completing this whole process. In the meantime, Brian, is the sound clear?
Very clear, yes.
Okay, then let's begin. The topic today is the power of smaller micro changes, and essentially it has to do with making very, very small, very, very simple pages to your site that you might overlook in the interest of the normal testing menu that most of us utilize. And often with the best intentions, we apply all we've learned over the years and make significant changes to a site page, but and sometimes the results are very encouraging. But once we've optimized a page, we have discovered that sometimes the tiniest test will still leave a significant yield. And so we want to talk about a series of tests that were so small you would almost not expect any results, and tell you in this process of trying to determine the impact, we made some discoveries and insights, and out of that we'll have suggestions for you. There's a lot of data today. I'll try to move through it reasonably. It's not complex, but there's a number of tables, and we're going to be dropping them into your notes as we move along. You'll want to refresh your notes as we do so. And then let me remind you that because we have now have so many people on these calls, we're doing our questions via email. You just email questions@marketingexperiments.com, and we'll be selecting and responding to those. If we're unable to answer your question on the telephone, we'll try to still answer it in person because we do want to help you. So let's begin with our first test, and it was for a very large online publisher. We made only one small change in a single sentence near the order button. Now, I want to point out something about this that isn't in my notes. We had produced a yield of several hundred percentile in our test already. This page was a highly optimized page that was performing just it was remarkable. Jimmy, do you know what the overall conversion increases compounded over a year were on this page? Because I know this is a project you worked on. I was speaking to Jimmy Ellis. Actually, I'm not sure that Jimmy's able to log in because of where we're at right now. I looked at the last numbers, and one test alone yielded 355% increase. And so here we are with this optimized page, and we decide to change almost a single word. And if you look in your notes, we're going to drop some data in, and I want you to see what the results were. Hit the refresh button, and you'll notice page A and page B. Page A had 8,620 uniques. Page B, 8,759. The difference in orders, well, at first doesn't seem that significant. On conversion, 158 and 1.77, it represents a net increase of 12%, which is a lot of revenue. Now, when you see that change, the question is, what did we do that produced a gain of 12%? And I'm going to show you that now. In fact, Brian, go ahead, if you're prepared, and drop in lines 55 through 63 of the research notes, page A and page B, the line change.
Okay, that'll be just one moment.
As he's dropping that in, I'll read you the line. 7 days free or continue at 24.95 for 8 weeks at a savings of 50%. The next one read, 7 days risk-free, then continue at just $24.95 for 8 weeks, and then it says in parentheses, 50% savings, period. If you'll hit, is that in your notes now, Brian?
Yes, it's there.
If you will please hit the refresh button on your notes, you'll notice that we've added to your browser, and you should notice and see the two lines. The words free and risk-free in each page were bolded to highlight the key benefit. By just barely changing one line, we picked up 12%. So a key point here is when testing small changes, and I think this is there's a lot of insight in this. It's almost hard to communicate, but gravitate towards those changes that are impacting key decision points along primary eye paths, or at least along the key funnel. Because it may be that there's something you want to do to improve the eye path itself, as opposed to simply work within that eye path. But if you either add something in terms of draw attention to it because it's strategic, or you focus on text or anything else that's very close to a significant decision point, you can sometimes see a significant yield. Indeed, this was, 12, and all with a very, very small change. So, looking at that, we're going to move to our second experiment, and I want to show you again and what we learned from that. So, for the same company, we tested two pages in an 8-day microtest. Page A had text in two columns of copy. Page B combined the text into a single column. So we moved from two columns to one column. Please, if you'll notice, Brian is dropping a table in. Hit your refresh button, and you should see that we, on page A, had 2,478 uniques, and on page B, 2,384, with a substantial difference. What you need to understand is that page B converted 88% better than page A. Speaking of A and B, constructing these tests is, when you're trying to get this type of result, you really need to understand how to set up a test like this properly. And so one of the things that we're doing now, and I think there may be a link in your notes, I think it's link 12, but we have set up a certification program for people who want to learn to test. And there'll be two or three. The first is on split testing, and the next, more or less, it's a course and a test, and it establishes you as a certified testing expert through MEC Labs. And if you if you actually look in your notes on link 12, you can go back and look at that later, but it will explain to you how we're doing it. And the first test, and it's kind of a prerequisite, is in split testing, and we're going to be offering a second one in multivariate testing, and then we're going to be offering some others that are specialized in testing for email, for instance, and testing for search. These are very intensive training programs done via the net, and you can attend them live or you can get the recordings. And it's something you may want to look at if you're trying to determine how you can increase the effectiveness of your testing or simply get those types of credentials through you know, a third party. So look, if you will, at a key point. It's not only text, but simple changes in page design can yield a significant increase in conversion. And at the end of this report, we're going to suggest a number of areas for improvement and that you can utilize if you're trying to isolate where to focus this small change philosophy. But I'd like to give you another set of data. And in this third test, we went to small changes in a multivariate testing environment. And our first two tests were simple A-B split tests. And multivariate testing allows you to test a number of small changes at once. For most of you are aware of that. For an introduction to these topics, you can see our recent reports. The A-B split testing brief is number 2, and the multivariate testing brief is number 3 in your links. And I'm looking, Brian, at form A, B, and C. Are we at that point yet? Don't let me slip past. No, we're coming to that in just a moment. So in this third experiment, we focused on testing a number of small changes simultaneously using multivariate testing, and we ran a microtest focusing on the following page elements: subscription form, the headline, and the logo. And this is an ongoing test, but results were gathered after the first 8 days of testing, and below are the results for each variable in isolation. We tested 3 subscription forms. And if you will look at form A, that's link 4 in your notes, you can see form A. It should pop up, form A. If you look at form B in your notes, you'll see form B. And form C in your notes will tell you the third. Now, prior to dropping the data in, look at the 3 forms and just speculate for a moment or use your marketing instincts and tell us which form do you think was most effective. A, B, or C? I'm giving you just a moment to think about that. All right, now I'm going to ask Brian to drop a table in that will detail for you how these 2 forms performed for us. If you have questions about any of these experiments or what we're talking about, just ship us a note to questions@marketingexperiments.com. And if you'll look now in your notes, hit the refresh button, and you'll see that form A produced a conversion rate of 0.69%. The blue bottom form, form B, 39%. And form C, 54%. The standard form outpulled the more colorful variations, and it performed 28% better than the next best form. And that's the next best form. It was nearly double the worst form, or the third best form. You may wonder why. I can give you a suggestion to think about, and these are parts of the insights that you got to be careful about when you're actually testing. But if you're not careful and you use too much color in a form with which you're expecting a response, people will somehow associate your form with an advertisement or a banner. Be very careful about using color in the inappropriate way with your forms, because you will have your form perceived as an ad by someone who's giving that page 3 seconds and blasting through. All right, so then we tested 6 different headlines. And Brian is going to drop all six of these in here. Now, the reason we use this particular product quite a bit in our testing with you is because we control the marketing with this product and all the tests associated with it. And so we're able to give you specific information that might not be able to use with a research partner who's a Fortune 100 company and would not want anyone to know what's happening in their creative, et cetera. So you'll see us with the National Alert Registry quite a bit in our experiments. We actually run it with many other products or offers, but when we give you information on that, we can be much more candid. And you can actually see the six headlines. Brian, have you dropped those in their notes yet?
Yes, it should be there now.
So if you look in your notes, you'll see the headlines. And yet again, if you want to play test your marketing skills with us here for just a moment, informally, without anybody knowing the outcome, read the six headlines and select the one that you think will score the best. In a moment, we'll drop a table in and tell you. Headline one is a declarative statement with specific facts. Headline two, ask a thought-provoking question. Headline three implies a promise. Headline four connects to something emotional directly, your children, and connects the threat to the product. Headline five is a simple headline with less sales tone. And headline six is even simpler with even less sales tone. Let's then look at the results. Brian, go ahead and drop the table in.
Okay. Should be there now.
As you look at your data, you should see how headline performed. Headline one did the worst. Headline six. Headline six and was negligibly different than headline three. The strongest headline was number five. I haven't seen all the test data connected to this test myself. It was run by Aaron Rosenthal, who has done a superb job with the test on this offering. But I can tell you that headline five, I didn't even look at the table when I identified for you headline five. And the difference in tone, but I would suggest for you that the tone difference in headline five represents something we've talked about in our report called transparent marketing. I can't tell you that that is the reason why without seeing every aspect associated with this, but headline 5-1. And Nick, feel free to jump in with a comment. Any of my staff that's on the phone, now's a good time. Is there anything else you want to add to what I've said, gentlemen?
Well, it's Nick here, and I'm looking at those, and I mean, this is one of the things I find interesting about testing like this, particularly where you can test multiple headings, is before we tested these, if you'd asked me to kind of put money on the table and use my expertise to guess, I wouldn't have known which one to choose, and I don't think I'd have identified the correct, you know, the winner, the one that came out best. I mean, it's significant that you, in the introduction you described number five as less salesy and number six as being even less salesy. Whether it's correct or not, there's an implication there that there is a kind of optimum tone where you are presenting some kind of direction and enthusiasm, but you're being very careful not to be identified as pitching too heavily. So in hindsight, I think one can come up with reasons why number five might win, but without the test data, I don't think I'd have guessed any of them in the correct sequence. And to me, that's the importance of testing like this, because particularly when it comes, well, with copy and design, it is so hugely subjective. You can get a dozen highly qualified experts looking at these lines, and I'm sure that everyone would have made mistakes in figuring out the sequence.
I will tell you, Nick, one point I would point out that would make me more confident with five than six is that headline 5 has none of the common sales language. So it has a better tone, but it connects real clearly with the problem statement.
Well, it does. And there's also just in the number 6 says search the national, you know, offender database. And that's you're asking somebody to do something. Number 5 says identify, and there is an implied promise there. So like I say, I think looking at it now, we can see strengths in 5 that are not in 6. But again, I'd have had a real hard time predicting in advance whether this toned down number 5 would beat some of the more emotionally charged headlines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'd have guessed that, because sometimes when you do get more emotional and you get closer to people's personal experience, sometimes those lines will do much better. But like
yes.
I say, for me, it just underscores the importance of testing and not making assumptions about copy and design.
It's very true. It's very true. Nick's an expert in his primary area with us is analyzing and working with and overseeing the testing that we're doing related to email and web communication. You know, and so. Those are good insights, Nick. Particularly, you know, it's the thing about testing that we see over and over again, and I'll move on here, but in large companies, we've had them ask us to test, but please don't test this or please don't test that. And what they're saying really is, we just spent, and they've told me this off the record, we just spent $1 million getting that home page, took us a year, and we don't want to know if it doesn't perform as well as the other home page. And that's unfortunate, but testing is almost a threat. And to really be good at this business, you have to lay your ego down, and you have to be willing to admit that you don't know, and you have to be willing to be wrong. Because a good test strategy will always identify places where you are wrong. Otherwise, you're not testing properly. You're not taking the proper risk structure in your methodology. So, a good point. Let's move on. We also tested 3 different logos, and you can see those logos. You can check in your notes for the logos themselves. Let me just move up here. Brian, tell them the link numbers, please.
Sure. Those are links 7, 8, and 9.
7, 8, and 9. All right. And you may want to check each one of those links because you'll see the actual pictures of the 3 logos and the color differentiation. While you're looking at that, I'm going to ask Brian to go ahead and drop the table in that will identify which one of these performed best. Logo C outpulled the next best logo by 19%. That's the silver eagle. By 19%. And once again, each of these small details, one graphic change, a different headline, a primary difference in color, either in the logos or in the forms, all of these, you know, have significant impact. And here's the thing. You may be one of the – some of our listeners are with large companies with unlimited resources, or they're smaller companies, and you don't need to be intimidated. Almost any of this can be done in simple A-B split test, and these are small changes that almost any one of us on the phone can implement. If you're not sure of absolutely getting the right size test sample and setting up the methodology right and which software to use, those are things you can learn in the – and the A-B split testing and the certification program that we have. But it doesn't take a huge budget to accomplish these kinds of tests and see significant returns. Taken together, and this is probably the most significant thing, not the most important learning, but the most significant statement that I'll say in this conference, taken together, these 3 small changes amounted to a combined increase in conversion of 104%. Over the next best set of variables. This is the compounded gain of 3 small cumulative changes It's remarkable. And this would mean, without increasing your advertising budget, and I'm just pulling this out of the air, these are not in my notes, if your site is producing $1 million in revenue a year with this product, it might be possible for you to produce $2 million in revenue without increasing your advertising budget. So, having said all of that, let me move back to some very practical details, and that is small changes that may or may not. You may be wondering, okay, this is great, but what do I test? And I'm going to start to lay down for you some points that will help you know areas that you could focus on right away that are very easy to test. Here we go with some that you can systematically test, and the first one is one you can test with hardly an A-B split testing tool. You can do this almost sequentially, and that is your PPC headlines. Small changes in your pay-per-click headlines have a significant impact on your click-through rate. And as you know, the higher click-through rate, the higher you are on that Google AdWords page. You might also experiment with geo-targeting with keyword insertion. And geo-targeting allows you to focus on a specific area. Jalali, you want to comment on geo-targeting? Jalali or Aaron, I'm not sure if Aaron's on right now with our move taking place, but either one.
Geo-targeting in terms of
pay-per-click. Yeah, what I'm talking about is the geo-targeting that Google allows you to do where you're able to focus on a specific area for your pay-per-click ads to appear.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely something that is very important. When you're setting up a Google AdWords campaign, you have the ability, as many of you know, to choose country or languages. And, often we see large pay-per-click campaigns, and this is a very simple change to make, large pay-per-click campaigns where you're actually targeting countries where the individuals are not even able to buy through your website, that you don't accept payments. Another sort of version of that I believe it's MSN's new search, new pay-per-click program has, is you can actually adjust bids based on demographics of who's clicking and who you're targeting, and all of that just sort of adds another level of complexity to pay-per-click, but actually allows advertisers to be more targeted.
Excellent. All right. Then let's move on and talk about some of these other areas. Nick Busborn?
Yep.
Do you have a full set of notes in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Let me let you continue and discuss these key points, and I'll just comment on this end, but go ahead and talk about some of the other things they can test.
Okay, we have quite a lengthy list here, and we've broken it down between websites. There's a group, and then a second group on email marketing and newsletters. Brian, I don't know whether you have these as notes to drop in, but if you want to drop in the first set, the website.
Sure, I can do that.
Okay. So in a moment, if everyone just wants to refresh the page, and you can just kind of watch as I go through these. Perhaps one of the simplest and most important things to test is the headline. It's if you go into the offline industry, if you're looking at advertising, particularly direct marketing, speak to any direct marketer who's been at it for a long time, and they'll tell you how important changes to the headline are. You can make a very small change to a headline and have a significant impact with that. So I may be a little biased, but I think that's probably the first thing. If I was being asked to make a small change to an offer page, a landing page, some important page on a site, I would probably look at that headline first. And again, like I was mentioning earlier, I wouldn't really second guess. I wouldn't use my experience to say, oh, this for sure will work better. But I would use that experience and that of the people around me to come up with a short list. And if you have the opportunity to test 6 headlines instead of 2, so much the better, because you're going to be very limited if you just test 2 headlines one against the other. some more subtle changes. You know, the headline size, the size of the font, the color of the headline. These will make, and they will have an impact. Again, very hard to predict, which is what testing is all about. So try it and see what happens. Next, I would look at subheads. And I do this because the way that people part of this list is based on the way people look at web pages. You know, a page comes up for the very first time. Unlike print materials, where people's eyes tend to go to the photographs first, on the web, people's eyes tend to go to the text first because they want to find out whether they've landed on a page that's going to answer their particular need or help them achieve their task. So people scan. They scan the headline, then they scan the subheads, and after that they'll start scanning links and short bullet text. So after the headline, I would test the headline, the subheads. Unique value proposition. Here's something that is that can be built into your headlines and your subheads, and this is something Dr. McLaughlin's talked about on a number of occasions. Hopefully you have a very clear value proposition. You have a strong promise. You have something in a heading on a major page that makes people think, oh, goodness, this is different from what I've seen before. I can immediately understand what value I can get from this. So if you have a value proposition, try shifting it. Try expressing it in a slightly different way, framing it in slightly different ways. Again, that will make a difference, and you'll only figure out which is the best line by testing. Link text. Again, link text is enormously important, and people don't pay nearly enough attention to it. Link text is important for your readers. It's also very important for search engines if you're trying to optimize your pages. Link text really needs to say, most link text is too short, that you need enough words to clearly describe what is coming up on the page people arrive at when they click on that link. Test those links, test the descriptions, test the length of those links. The same with button text. The word, you know, do you add to shopping cart, do you add to cart, do you add to basket? There are all kinds of different phrases out there. They're all worth testing. G, the call to action test, which goes back to one of the tests we talked about 20 minutes ago, that as well as the strength of the headline, when you actually want someone to do something, the text you use can have quite an impact on how many people proceed beyond that point. So play around with that. Move words around. It may even be, you may not even change the words in the phrase. You may move part of a phrase to the beginning or the end. You may, if there's some risk-free element like we were talking about, does it make a difference whether you have the risk-free words at the beginning of the line or the end of the line? There are all kinds of subtle changes you can make, and each of them will make a difference. It's most unlikely that you'll get exactly the same response from both versions. H, background color. Again, it's something very few of us think about online. It's something that direct marketers think about a huge amount in print because, again, it has an impact. There is a huge psychology associated with color in terms of background, headlines, things like that. I, logo, color, and design. Well, we just had a look at the differences, and the example that we showed of the Eagle logo, one being gold and one being silver. Again, I would never have anticipated the difference in results based on that change from gold to silver. So again, that's something else that's important to check. Addition of images or reducing the number of images. For sure, sometimes there are pages where one or two images will help, but there are other pages, and we've all seen them, where you can just feel your eyes and attention being overwhelmed by the number of images. If you feel you have too many images on a page, remove some and test it. If you feel that a page is a little bit too dry and needs a bit more visual sort of stimulation and excitement, then try adding one or two images. See what happens. Something will happen. The number of text columns, that again addresses a test we talked about today. Our learning so far has been that one column will generally outperform two, but test it. and also test which information goes into which columns. Like, again, traditionally, say if you have a testimonials, it's almost like a habit now to put testimonials in the right-hand column as a kind of support. Well, test it. Try putting some of those testimonials in the main flow of the cell in the central column. See what happens. L, column width or page width. Again, it's something that we people don't really test nearly enough. What happens if you reduce the column width of your principal sales message? Does it make it easier to read? Well, I think probably the answer to that is probably yes. A narrower column is easier to read. Does it have an impact on conversion rates? Well, test it and see what happens. Sequence of page copy, again, enormously important, something that direct marketers, when they're looking for conversion rates offline, have historically, for 50, for 100 years, have gone to enormous trouble testing the sequence in which you present the sales argument step by step. You know, what happens if you should you put your reassuring guarantee statements towards the end of the page? Should you bring them up a bit? So, again, traditionally, we put the guarantee promise statement towards the end of the sales text. This is based on some testing in the past, but again, don't just assume that what tested positively, you know, a year ago or 5 years ago is necessarily true today. So that's things you can test.
Nick?
Yeah?
Let me just mention something for us. Are you, have you moved to the brief? Let me just mention a couple things. I want to take just a second before we continue to answer a question or two. And if you've got more questions, please send them to us, and we'll try to help you. And then we'll wrap up with more test concepts related to email marketing and newsletters. We have been asked a couple, one question in particular that has to do with the difference between the word or and then in the offer, and that's from Tom. And Tom, it's a good question, and I'm actually going to let the testing group personally email you an answer to that. I will only say that the existing copy, even though we'd optimized the page, there were certain parts of it that we didn't have the principal rights to change. And when we got full control of the page, we actually were able to do that. And I think your observation is reasonably good. But I'll have one of our experts who oversaw the test respond to that part of your question and perhaps help you with a good answer. Chuck is on the line, and he was asking a question about the size of the samples. And we get more into this one in this A/B split testing. One of the things that we're going to have to teach in the clinic is, or in that in the program, is how big is a sample and how do you know you've got enough? And if you're not clear in his question, what he's saying is, did you have enough unique visitors or orders to know? And it's really not so much the number of unique visitors as it is the number of orders. That's more important when you're trying to determine this in terms of prioritization of the significant number for determining that results are valid. But let me point out that many of us are faced with a problem that is very difficult. That is, you probably have you may have an email list, and it's only got 10,000 names on it, but it's a homegrown email list. It's highly effective for you. You're wondering what to do to maximize an opportunity. You could care less about testing. You just want the most revenue. Now, you will test because you want the most revenue, but you didn't wake up one day when you were 11 years old and say, I want to become a testing expert. And you're not living for the sake of running tests. You're living for the sake of generating, hopefully more than this, but at least from a company standpoint, you're after profits. Bottom line is this. What do you do? Does it even matter? Can you run a test? If you've got 10,000 names, what can you determine from running a sampling of, say, how can you run enough emails to really determine when you figure out what the open rate you're going to be that you're actually got a statistic that's important enough for you to make or determine which headline or subject line in your email is going to pull the most yield? We ran a test yesterday on a list of 50,000. We ran it in small intervals. We ran one recently. It's a list of 1,000,000, and we ran two segments of 150,000 emails. That's a big difference. Recently, I ran a test with 500 emails. Now, if you're a statistician and you're trained in testing, you're liable to think, well, that's just absolutely you can't determine anything with that. But I will beg to differ with you, and I'll tell you why. First of all, the goal of testing is not to run a test. It's to glean useful information. Testing, often like the, you know, inductive logic, testing can establish a probability. And testing isn't done in a vacuum. It's done by somebody who typically has a certain familiarity with their market and an intuitive feel. And if you try to test in isolation without adding the contextualization that comes from knowing your market, it's much harder. But someone who knows their list, who doesn't email sample two samples of 500, who sees that X amount of people actually responded, and then who takes the trouble to do something that will confirm what they suspect, and I'll tell you what that something is, who then gets on the telephone, if he has the right to do this, or he has favored customers, or people that he will permit him to place a phone call to them, and then say, look, I'm trying to understand something, and this is what just happened, and can you tell me how this strikes you? And he begins to move around in there, talking directly with his market, or getting discussions taking place on his website, on his forum, or his blog, you can begin to establish a probability. And that probability sometimes is high enough that you can make a reasonably informed decision. Now, I know that my academic friends could argue eloquently that they can't, you know, the confidence intervals and all the statistical equivalents necessary to be certain are not there. But again, you're not trying to get a degree awarded by this test. You're trying to figure out what to do. And you're going to know a whole lot better what to do if you talk to your market, if you do some pre-testing or micro-testing, than if you just guess. I'll go a step further and give you a perfect example where this takes place, and that's in price testing. Because often you're very frightened to run a price test with a large segment of your list because you're liable to alienate one segment or another. Or more than that, you're liable just to lose so much revenue in the testing process. And let's suppose your house list is only 30,000 names. You just can't run 3 10,000, so because you've used your whole list. If you run 3 5, you've used 15,000, half your list up, figuring out what to send to the other half of your list, and only one third of the two prices is going to be optimal, assuming one outperforms the other two, which means that you've got limitations here. But I'll tell you something, and let me even give you another complication. And that is that you often don't know what the price is or should be until you've charged too much. Until people pull back their hand, you don't know that you've hit the number. From there, you can back down. So what do? You run a micro test, and you get on the phone. I'll give you an example. And again, this flies against convention. We just ran a direct mail test, combining things we learned on the internet with a full direct mail piece sent to people's post office box instead of their email campaign. Typically, you need $250,000 minimum to run a direct mail test because you need a large enough sampling and the cost associated with it. We produced a highly optimized piece of collateral based on pre-testing it on the internet, and then we ran our test with two lists of 5,000 names, 10,000 people total to get our direct mail test. Now, I understand that somebody from UCLA may say to me, well, but, you know, that's not a large enough sampling. But you know what? We learned a ton. First thing we did is we didn't use a call center to answer the phones. We ran the telephone lines directly to our office, and we had guys on our staff making six figures plus answering the telephone and talking to people as if they were, you know, $30,000 a year or $25,000 a year telemarketers. They had scripts, and by the time we spent just a little bit of time answering the phone and talking to the customers, combining the experiential, the empirical, the William James approach, the philosopher psychologist William James, by getting that empirical data and combining it with the hard mathematical data, we established a probability, and we really learned quite a bit. It's going to impact how we do our next test, and we did it without spending $250,000. And so we'll run 5 microtests rather than 1 giant test. And at the end of those 5 microtests, we'll know way more than had we run 1 major test. So I've said all that to try and help some of you who may have an inferiority complex because you don't have a large enough sampling to really, or a large enough list to even get an adequate sampling. But I want to help you if I can. And so consider that information. If you've got questions about it, email us, and we can talk about it in the blog more because I know that I'm not answering everything, but we'll be talking more about this in some of our other conferences, which are all free, or in our certification program we talk about AB. So that being said, I think we need to talk about email. And, Nick, you're doing well. I think in the interest of time, you'll need to – this is your favorite subject, but you're going to have to move through it probably reasonably fast and just cover – what the most important parts are here, okay?
Okay, that was very simply put. the first and most obvious thing, I think, to test with emails is subject lines, because if you don't get the email opened, it doesn't matter how good the text or the images are in your email. So that's something that we, even in-house, when we send out emails, we're in the habit of testing. Because you'll learn something every time. Try, and I believe Brian has dropped these into the notes so you can kind of follow along. Try a salutation. Some emails start off just with going straight into sentence one of paragraph one. There's a lost opportunity there. Email is a personal communication tool. So if you can make it a little more personal, then I think it engages the reader more quickly and more thoroughly. For the same reason, sign off, and if you can, sign off with someone's real name, not from the X company team or the X company customer service team. You know, have a real name there, because teams don't write emails. People, individuals write them. D, and this I think is an important test, particularly if you're trying to maximize conversion to sale through people clicking through from an email. And that is the number of links within. And I've seen test data pointing in both directions. One set saying that the fewer the links, the less confused people are, and you'll get a higher click-through rate. I saw some other test data that said put in more links because then you're providing more variety and the chances are that more people will find at least one link they want to click on. So, again, that's something worth testing. The position of the links as well, traditionally a lot of emails have the link, particularly if it's just one link, have a link down towards the end. So there's all the introduction, the sales pitch, the summing up, and now please click here. Experiment. Try either putting the link higher up or having two, repeating the link at the end but also earlier on in the email for people who, as soon as they read the first paragraph, think, okay, that's interesting. I want to see more about this. F, small incentive, again, very basic, the same kind of thing we'll do on a web page, but is often missing in an email, is the mention or promise of some incentive for people to click. G, personal introduction from the editor. This relates more to newsletters, where again, often newsletters completely miss the personal potential of email. Just a short introduction from an editor, from the voice of an individual human being, can make a big difference, because all of a sudden the whole communication is no longer from the corporation, but it's from an editor who is putting together, an individual who's putting together information for you to read. H, sequence of copy, that's something I covered with websites. Again, very important, test the sequence of how you present information step by step. Point I, text versus HTML. Again, this is an old test, but again, worth trying. Text and HTML, and if Flint and time allowed, I could speak about this for hours, but they both have individual strengths. Try both, see what happens. J, including reader feedback. Again, I've seen testing here with newsletters where you get a tremendous response when you actually invite readers to participate in the creation of the content of the newsletter. In other words, in one newsletter, you have a short survey or you ask questions. In the next edition, the next issue, you actually respond to what people said before. And again, people will get much more of a sense of ownership. It's not just blah, blah, blah from the corporation, but hey, somebody there's listening and they're adjusting content according to what we, the readers, think. There's huge potential there. Finally, including brief testimonials, this is something that we'll do quite frequently on web pages, not something that we do as frequently in emails or in newsletters, but again, it's worth trying, worth testing. As I said on the web pages, with email and newsletters, anything you do test will yield a little information. You will learn something from every test. So really, it's the habit of testing. And your emails and newsletter will slowly evolve. And the better you do, the closer you get to what your readers are really wanting and expecting. So it's not just about conversion and click-through from individual emails or newsletters. It's about retaining the attention of your readers over the long term, as well as going for short-term increases. Are you there, Flint?
Yes, I'm there.
I went through that in record time.
You did quite good. All right, so another point is you can measure the cumulative effect of multiple changes made over time using the spreadsheet tool that we have built for this very point, because these small changes can make a major difference for you. And if you look, there's a link number 10, and it's an actual spreadsheet that helps you determine which item to test first and which item to test second and which item to test third. And then along with that is a journal report on that. And again, all of this is at no cost. The compounding effect of microgains, which is a full brief from a set of research reports that will tell you, it really ties in with what we're doing today, because today we're demonstrating how the impact of small changes can surprise you with great results. But in that brief, we're talking about which changes to do first, second, third, and fourth. And so that's link number 11 in your notes. And essentially, I believe that's going to cover the primary data that we have from this set of experiments. I will point out that many of you helped us with a survey that you completed online, helping us identify a whole key group of research topics that you're fascinated with and would like to have more information about. We're preparing a series of tests right now for email marketing, and we're going to be releasing those reports as those tests come in and conducting clinics on that topic. We've got more lined up for you in search that we are preparing, and then we're doing some unique things combining offline and online. I think a lot of internet marketers are missing opportunities there. And then we have more click fraud testing that we're planning. We've been actually on the telephone today with some major organizations lining up the work necessary to get that done, and all these additional topics. In the meantime, if there's something that's important to your company or your marketing plans and we're not aware of it, email us your suggestions. We pay a lot of attention to what you say to us. And you can also, I think you can comment in the blog, but certainly email us and we will answer your questions and other questions that have come in or that are coming in, we'll be answering, you know, in the blog itself, so you can check back with some of that. I want to thank you for your trust. And we'll work very hard and we'll have another conference call in about 2 weeks with our next set of findings. Thank you, and you have a fine day.